You're listening to Radio Aryan.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, a vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your shoulder.
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. The date is Thanksgiving Day, Thursday, November 22nd, 2018. I'm Andy Donner, and you're listening to Radio Free Northwest. A happy Thanksgiving Day to you all. This being a proper Thanksgiving show, in addition to our regular contributors, I want to throw in my own timely remarks. You'll all be happy to know I will lay off with the you need to come home stuff this week, since I'd rather try something else. Hopefully you'll all find useful. But before I get into that, 'tis the season, you know, and we need to play something appropriate along those lines. Enjoy.
Coming this Christmas, the Turner Diaries video game. The Turner Diaries video game. Complete with its own special game controller. Through the magic of video technology, you can be part of changing the system. Using our simulated rapid-fire submachine gun joystick, fight back when federal goons come to enforce the Cohen Act by seizing guns. Run missions through mazes of urban cesspools. Taking out the mongrels ruining society with crime, drugs, and interracial bestiality. The Turner Diaries video game. Stage 2 for advanced users lets you plan the seizure of a large West Coast metropolis and send its mongrel garbage out to the desert. Then infiltrate one of the system's nuclear bases to help secure your gains and prepare to vaporize those nasty little beanie heads who've caused all those troubles. But watch out, you can get caught and tortured, sidetracking you for months. Plan your escape from captivity and head up to level 3 of the game. In level 3, you suffer a nuclear attack, but restore your honor by retaliating against those with the mark of Cain. Win the game by flying your single-engine Cessna through a gauntlet of anti-aircraft fire to your final five-sided target somewhere on the eastern seaboard. The Turner Diaries video game. Good practice for a wider, brighter society. Coming soon to a store near you.
I know a few of you saw that one coming, and you can thank one particular person in the headquarters group for reminding me about that item. Now that we've all got it out of our systems, though, I need to play something more appropriate for the occasion. Here's the old man himself.
Tell you what, every year I like to post the true story of the first Thanksgiving, which needless to say is a very different thing from the politically correct crap that we get from the media and from our liberal education system. Now, it's true that Thanksgiving did originate in Puritan New England, but not in the way that we've been told. This is the original proclamation issued by the Governor and Council of State of the Massachusetts Bay Colony on June the 20th, 1676. The Holy God, having by a long and continual series of his afflictive dispensations in and by the present war with the heath and natives of this land, written and brought to pass bitter things against his own covenant people in this wilderness, yet so that we evidently discern that in the midst of his judgments he hath remembered mercy, having remembered his footstool in the day of his sore displeasure against us for our sins, with many singular intimations of his fatherly compassion and regard, preserving many of our towns from desolation threatened and attempted by the enemy, and giving us, especially of late, with many of our confederates, many signal advantages against them, without such disadvantage to ourselves as formerly we have been sensible of. If it be the Lord's mercy that we are not consumed, it certainly bespeaks our positive thankfulness when our enemies are in any measure disappointed or destroyed, and fearing the Lord should take notice under so many intimations of his returning mercy, we should be found an insensible people, as not standing before him with thanksgiving, as well as lading him with our complaints in the time of pressing afflictions. The council has thought meet to appoint and set apart the 29th day of this instant June as a day of solemn thanksgiving and praise to God for such his goodness and favor, many particulars of which mercy might be instanced, but we doubt not those who are sensible of God's afflictions have been as diligent to espy him returning to us, and that the Lord may behold us as a people offering praise and thereby glorifying him. The council doth recommend it to the respective ministers, elders, and people of this jurisdiction, solemnly and seriously, to keep the same, beseeching that, being persuaded by the mercies of God, we may all, even this whole people, offer up our bodies and souls as a living and acceptable service unto God by Jesus Christ. Note that the actual first Thanksgiving was proclaimed 56 years after the landing at Plymouth Rock, so it had nothing to do with the Pilgrims or Elmer Fudd running around in the snow with a blunderbuss. Note also that it was in June, which actually makes a lot more sense than a cold Massachusetts November. Finally, note that the first Thanksgiving was to celebrate a white military victory over the Indians, not to invite them all to sit around the same table over turkey and cranberry sauce. Now, the victory in question was the winding down of what is known as King Philip's War, which was the only Indian uprising in American history that ever had a serious chance of driving the English colonists out of the land. In case anyone questions that, it was only a few years later that the Indians actually did drive the Spanish out of Santa Fe and back to Mexico for 12 years, so the danger was real. In the space of little more than a year, 12 of the region's towns in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island were destroyed and many more damaged. The colony's economy was all but ruined, and much of its population was killed, including one-tenth of all men available for military service. So, when you sit down to your turkey and pumpkin pie today, give thanks to those hard-nosed, hard-boiled Yankee religious fanatics, whatever you may think of them, who fought and bled and in some cases lost their homes, their lives, and everything they had in order to win white people the right to stay here and become Americans eventually. The present Thursday in November holiday, by the way, originated as a propaganda stunt proclaimed by Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War in order to distract the North's attention from the fact that at the time the Union was getting its ass kicked by the Confederate Army.
Westbound and down, 18 wheels are rolling. Are we going to do what they say can be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound just like a bandit run.
Comrades, this is the trucker coming at you from North Dakota near Fargo. Winter's hit. There's a little bit of snow on the ground up here. It's down in the mid-20s and stuff as I've been running across the northern part of the country here. Just got under a load going from Pennsylvania over to the homeland. Elections come and gone. If you didn't vote, well, shame on ya. You should have voted. Maybe things would have turned out differently. I did vote, and unfortunately, we still have Maria Cantwell as a senator in Washington State. Well, what can you say? It's a damn blue state, and we've got too many stupid, brain-dead liberals in charge. And voting for these stupid, I'm going to get a little bit PO'd here. So if you've got virgin delicate ears, well, you can go on fast forward through me. We got so many whiny, little, pansy-ass, pieces of shit, fucking libtards up here that passed I-139 with about a 60 to 40 and stuff. So anything up here in Washington State that is self-loading is now classified as an assault weapon, be that a hunting shotgun if it's a semi-auto, most popular rifle round, the little 10/22. The Ruger 10/22, that's an assault weapon. Yeah, okay. Well, you know how I feel about guns. Leave my damn guns alone. So, we've got too many spineless shitbags up here in this state that decided to go and vote in this ballot initiative. I guess there's like five other states, Arizona's one of them, that are ballot initiative states that they're going to be setting sights on next time around. So, all you spineless little fucking turd heads here in Washington State, thanks a hell of a lot for that. Not overly happy with that. I'm sure Andy will be much more eloquent than I am, but I'm really pissed off that we have Maria Cantwell to put up with for another term along with this bullshit. But anyway, on the good side, well, it'll make it that much easier to take over the damn state once all you finally get around to voting with your feet and move here. Another voting thing that you should be doing is with your wallet and your money, like set a budget, be it $5-$10 a month, or whatever, do it on a consistent basis, and maybe we can go and get this ball rolling a little bit faster than it has been. So, anyway, well, this is the trucker trying to keep my blood pressure down, so I'll quit ranting and raving about this. But anyway, hope to see you out here on the road. I guess probably after springtime would be a good time, making your scouting trips and hopefully your move out here to the homeland. Vote with your feet, people. Get out from underneath the shit that you're in right now and move out here to the homeland. All right, well, this is the trucker signing off from North Dakota.
Westbound down, 18-wheeler rolling. We're gonna do what they say can be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch a bandit run.
Hey, Truth Seekers. Thanks for joining me today. I was going to do a video on Thanksgiving about how it set the tone for the argument of freedom versus collectivism in the USA, meaning that the Pilgrims tried free market capitalism only after the socialist communal experiment basically almost wiped everyone out. I am going to have to put that off for next year. However, I did see something that made me laugh hysterically. More proof that the Democrat Party really doesn't think their voters are stupid. They know it. They embrace it. They wield it. Not to be content with government schools teaching vulnerable minds all the wrong lessons about Thanksgiving, now millennial malcontents are to be sent back to their homes like intellectual suicide bombers, only that in the progressive version of cultural jihad, the parents are the targets of this negative sum brainwashing rather than the source. These idealistic traveling torpedoes armed with misinformation and drilled to exactness in the discipline of aggressive ignorance and its persistent application are to, rather than pull the trigger, pull out their cheat sheet to claim instant victory over the enemy. Now, if you're not aware of this, just look at some of the stuff that gets published prior to Thanksgiving. This Thanksgiving, don't play nice. Bring out your inner nasty woman instead. I don't think that's sexual. First snip from this article. If you decided to brave the holiday with relatives you know will make the day harder, time out. Alright, I often say the liberals have become completely illiberal, but one thing that they haven't given up on when it comes to liberality, to being liberal, is the misuse of words like courageous and bravery. You see here, it's brave for you to step out of your safe space with people you disagree with. That is hilarious. Continuing, resist the urge to make everyone happy. Don't consider it your job to reassure the table that peace is possible. It's like a fortune cookie. It only told you half the fortune. Instead of ending in bed, it should be, don't consider it your job to reassure the table that peace is possible with you there. If you want people to think twice about ranting at the dinner table, tell argumentative guests that they're on dish duty. Or make the conversation come at a cost, literally, by asking for a donation to give to a local food bank, the ACLU, or an immigrants' rights organization. This is pretty funny. This presupposes that there's not already a cost being borne by having you at the dinner table. Of course, economics is not liberals' forte. And secondly, I actually think if you asked me for a donation to a local food bank at Thanksgiving, there'd be plenty of canned food around. I would just tell you to deliver it and I'd give you an address across town. Problem solved. Everyone's happy. Some of the other headlines from the sane people among us, how not to argue with your crazy relatives at Thanksgiving, which is interesting if you juxtapose it to this one. Leftists encourage nasty, vindictive family dinners. What are they talking about? Well, take Samantha Bee's article, Tips for Talking Politics at Thanksgiving. Nothing nasty there until you scroll down and read some of the comments. Now, I realize this is Samantha Bee. Now, Samantha Bee is so funny. I'm actually surprised they didn't save her a slot in the new Ghostbusters movie. I mean, if you're going to retread the flick, make them all chicks, why not add a fifth slot for someone as obviously funny as Samantha Bee? Now, here's some of my favorite outtakes from this. If the relative saying grace before dinner is a Republican, just take a knee. Huh. That'll show them. and calmly and reasonably explain to your uncle why Donald Trump was the wrong choice for president, why your uncle quietly bleeds to death on the floor, the carving knife protruding from his chest. That's hilarious. Except, of course, when someone takes your advice, literally.
He's accused of pushing his father, Thomas, to the ground, grabbing a 4-inch blade steak knife and stabbing him multiple times in the chest. Then, when his mother, Patsy, tried to intervene, he allegedly stabbed her, too.
Why do bad things happen to nice people?
Man accused of stabbing his parents during a fight on Thanksgiving will stay in jail tonight. Deputies in Volusia County say this man, Edwin Darty, got into a fight with both of his parents during Thanksgiving dinner last night and stabbed them.
Deputies arrested Daughtry and say they found a bloody knife just a block away from the home. Both his parents were taken to the hospital and are expected to survive. A couple who neighbors say are friendly, church-going people.
It's a tragic response, you know, to something like that.
Now, I've read or watched about 6 articles on this particular incident, and this gentleman gets as close as anyone that I've heard discuss the actual root cause of the incident. To say that it's a tragic response to something like that, air quotes. Like what? The political discussion they were having? I don't pretend to know what crazy Edwin heard before he stabbed his parents, but what I do know, with absolute certainty, is if that he was a Trump supporter, we would have heard about it. And that media is why everyone hates you. But I guess I should be grateful he wasn't reported as a white Hispanic. So for those of you keeping score at home, liberalism can be confusing because the same people that constantly posture and lecture about getting along and not discriminating and making compromises are also the ones sending their people out to disrupt family dinners and get nasty. So it can be kind of confusing. What you won't hear is anyone taking credit for the fact that they're joking about killing someone at the dinner table and then someone actually tried to kill his parents at the dinner table. Because as we've all been told ad nauseum, that only poverty, anti-Muslim rhetoric, YouTube videos, and video games cause people to do crazy things, not liberalism, which actually provides instructions, which brings me to my next point. The Know Your Stuffing PDF. Oh, this is a gem. Couple observations real quick. One, these family members are bigoted and racist. Obviously, that goes without saying. Yet, they're portrayed here as half women and 50% non-Anglo. In addition, dad is conspicuously absent, hashtag what patriarchy, and we're inclined to assume the sole representative of the LGBTQ curious crowd is holding the cheat sheet, I suppose. Number 2, I know stuffing was a pun, but immediately I got an apropos visual of the unintended inspiration for these brainless millennials in need of stuffing.
I haven't got a brain, only straw.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
So let's take a peek at a couple of my favorite arguments delivered to those who do not yet possess the intellectual backing to construct their own arguments. On the subject of Obamacare, more than 129 million Americans with pre-existing conditions can no longer be denied coverage or charge more. You remember that thing called the housing bubble, where they told lenders they could no longer not loan to people with pre-existing financial conditions, and they could no longer be denied access to funds or charge more? Do you remember what happened after that? In a world devoid of supply and demand, did everyone get exactly what they wanted? The next cheat sheet gem. Donald Trump's plan to deport all undocumented immigrants would shrink the labor force by 11 million and reduce real GDP by 1.6 trillion. Interesting. First question. There's probably over 90 million people currently outside of the labor force. And you're worried about 11 million? Explain that to me. Second question. What will deporting 2 to 3 million of the invaders who have been convicted of a violent crime, such as rape, due to labor force? Would you prefer these rapists stay in the country? I mean, most of the victims are women. Why do you hate victims of rape, assault, and sexual harassment? Why do you want these people to suffer? Also, P.S. Even Ann Coulter is worried Trump has already gone soft on immigration. He's not even president yet. Trump is an opportunist, people. Prepare for disappointment. Under Trump, it's estimated that the national debt would rise by $5.3 trillion over the next decade. So let me do a little math here. 5.3 divided by 10.3 to carry the one. So Trump would slow the growth of the debt by 50% compared to our current president. Which side are you on? How did this make the cut? One prominent Trump supporter, who strangely is not named, even linked their proposed Muslim registry to Japanese internment camps, a really dark time in our history. Now, in exchange for your next student loan payment, can you tell me what party affiliation that person had who interned all those Japanese people? And while you're doing that, who was in control of the House and the Senate during that extremely dark time in our history? I can't remember. I don't know my history. Oh, man. Skip that one. We don't discriminate against people because of religion. It's in our constitution. Hey, you know what? Hallelujah. Pass the pumpkin pie. We agree on that. So I'm curious, what should the punishment be for people who do discriminate because of religion? I mean, let's just say hypothetically, what if they force someone via discrimination to lose their business and livelihood and ability to feed their family as a result of discrimination? What would you say we do with said person? Wait for the answer. Good. Then start doing something about what Bill Maher called the gay mafia.
Also, I think there is a gay mafia. I think if you cross them, you do get whacked. I really do.
And let's also discuss who we're going to make a donation to make sure that progressives can no longer discriminate against people for this reason that you and I both feel so strongly about. The KKK, white nationalists, and neo-Nazi groups praise his opponent, which shows they think he represents their values. The KKK, white nationalists, and neo-Nazi groups praised his appointment, which shows they think he represents their values. And he's an accused domestic abuser with a history of demeaning and threatening women. Look, I agree. People who do or enable this type of behavior have no business in the White House. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Okay, well, let's focus on the KKK. Look, ignoring the fact that it was started by Democrats, and that in addition to lynching thousands of black people, they also lynched about 1,000 white Republicans because those people were pro-freedom and pro-black rights, which the Democrat Party stood against, and then left a legacy for 100 years after the passing of the Emancipation Proclamation to make sure that blacks did not enjoy this full fruits of American citizenship, including trying to block the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, using legislative measures like Jim Crow, segregation, separate but equal, and when those didn't work, resorting to things like dogs and fire hoses. It's very hard to take your paranoia and hysteria seriously when you don't at least admit what the legacy of voting Democrat has been for blacks over the last 100 years. Once you start to do that, then we can start to have what the Young Turks would call a reasonable discussion. He picked Governor Mike Pence as his VP, who cut Indiana's Planned Parenthood funding in half to its 2005 levels. You say that like it's a bad thing. Look, the point of this, liberals are afraid of the boogeyman. It's all about making sure people stay afraid of an irrational perceived threat that will never come. I mean, it's kind of ironic that they prove how unpleasant America will become when Trump is president. By what? By being the unpleasant change they want to see in the world. I think Gandhi said that. Don't just be a miserable malcontent. Act on it. Start with those closest to you. Those who would typically not allow their space to be defiled with the noxious propaganda that empowers your sanctimonious, unearned moral superiority. Sure, they raised you. Sure, they fed you. Sure, they wiped your butt, dried your tears, and cared about you since the day they made a choice to let you live your misguided existence instead of helping someone at Planned Parenthood meet a quota by chopping you up and selling your parts wholesale to someday afford a Lambo.
I want a Lamborghini. That's how I want a Lamborghini.
Don't we all, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you thank them for this? By putting your faith in those who think so little of you that they make a cheat sheet to compensate for what you don't know, rather than encouraging you to try open-mindedness, tolerance, and seeking for actual wisdom. Which brings me to point number two. This cheat sheet is the equivalent of the dummy's guide to pretending you know stuff with a minor in incivility. Look, you don't have friends who speak this language. You never practice with them. It's an echo chamber. You've subsisted on a diet of feelings, emotions, and ironic antipathy for those who are not like you. You've built your house on a sandy foundation of faux outrage and perennial dissatisfaction, eschewing gratitude for the sacrifices that gave you the opportunity to capitalize on your limitless potential. And instead, what do? You lecture those who are already distraught at their apparent failure and misfortune, and now they're further punished and left to wonder at what point in time they could return in order to prevent this Biff Tannen alternate nightmare of an existence that they find themselves in.
And comrades, tonight I'm going to be discussing Breaking the Spell by Dr. Nicholas Kullerstrom. This is another book dealing with the revisionist topic. This author is an academic looking at primary source materials, particularly at the Bod Arelson archive, and also relying on the Confessions of Rudolf Hess. That is not to be confused with Hess. Hess was apparently in charge of Auschwitz. We're talking about Haas rather than Hess. The author notes that the confessions that were gotten out of Haas were questionable because they were made under torture. This author gets right into some of the nitty-gritties having to do with Auschwitz and particularly the delousing chambers. This author wants to know why the delousing chambers that were used strictly for clothes have more cyanide in their bricks than the infamous shower rooms. And the author also wants to know how the shower rooms actually would have worked. The author notes that confession of Haas that it only took 20 minutes, that 20 minutes was not really long enough, and he also notes that the rooms were not airtight. Now, the author does state that in theory, heaters and fans might have been used to increase the effectiveness of the gas, but these were not mentioned in the confessions. Granted, just because something wasn't mentioned doesn't necessarily mean it wasn't there. At any rate, Kallerstrom also questions the number of survivors, and the author notes the very large amount of money, apparently $61.8 billion, have been paid out to these survivors. The author makes the claim that Stalin had additional structures built specifically to perpetuate the idea of homicidal and genocidal intent. This author discusses methods of delousing and says that the methods used at Auschwitz were very much compatible with those that were in use by the early 1920s, according to this author, evidently persisted into the 1940s. You may have heard many contradictory claims about Auschwitz. Some will call it work camp, whereas others will call it actually a death camp. The reason that Auschwitz seems to have these two identities is that Auschwitz facility was actually quite a large industrial park. It had essentially two residential faculties. One was Birkenau, and that was a facility for those who were unsuited to do heavy work. And this Birkenau facility also contained a hospital. Then there was also the Monowitz facility, and this was actually designed for heavy industrial work. The author notes that the arrival of this Cyclone B actually would lower the death rate because, as he states, yet again, it was very important in delousing. The author notes that by 1944, microwave technologies would replace Cyclone B for the delousing of clothes. Kallerstrom notes that also, too, if the number of bodies that were claimed to be cremated were actually burned, then more of the coke residue would have been found at these archaeological sites. The author talks about Cardinal Williamson, who has gone on record as saying that he believes that about 200,000 to 300,000 Jews did perish in these camps, and that was largely due to disease and primarily due to typhus. Arguably, that is still a very large number, and you do have to realize that other groups were also found in the camps. I have to say that this author does take pains to make these camps, and most especially residential camps such as Auschwitz, he tends to make them sound a bit like three-star hotels, because he does say that in addition to having a hospital, they also had child care, they had theater, they had art classes, they put on plays and had an orchestra. So too, this author does note that contrary to what we may have seen in movies, the SS were actually not allowed to hit prisoners, and indeed prisoners could have approach Haas with various complaints. The author is very much impressed with the effort to make synthetic rubber that was going on at Auschwitz and also how they were turning coal into oil. Also, too, they made medical supplies, armaments, and clothing. There have been stories about there being an unpleasant odor hanging about Auschwitz, and this is often said to be quite sinister. However, the author explains that there was a horse shoe-fitting place plant that was nearby. And this would often cause a bad smell that many people claim that they remember. Also, the author takes pains to note that more Catholics than Jews actually died in these camps. The author tends to believe the story about the plan to deport Jews to Madagascar, and the author is very much satisfied that the Action Reinhardt camps, which consisted of Sobibor, Treblinka, and Belzec, were simply transit camps, and that people were simply passing through them. The author is very much incredulous to the sinister claims that bodies were being buried at these camps, particularly Treblinka, and that then they were being dug up and burned in order to hide evidence. Kallerstrom notes that today the Holocaust is very much a religion. And he notes that, after all, a person can easily lose a job if they were in any way questioning the Holocaust, whereas a religious skeptic is either sat with a complete indifference, or in academic circles, being a religious skeptic is indeed a benefit and even an expectation. And of course, one makes an exception for a religious school such as a Catholic college. But in general, a religious belief, particularly being Christian or Catholic, would likely be held against an academic. There also notes the 2011 UN Declaration of Free Expression, that a person has a right to free expression, even if their beliefs are erroneous or believed to be erroneous. However, this freedom of expression often contrasts laws in both France and Germany that can be very much held against individuals who attempt to do research. And often these individuals can lose their professions. Indeed, they might even find themselves in court and in worst case scenario could even be arrested. This author really wants to emphasize that he is attempting and that he is a spellbreaker. And indeed, the psychological benefits are unquestionable of such spellbreaking. Even so, it has to be noted that these camps were in no way a vacation, and it is noteworthy that they were very much ravaged by typhus. Even the most conservative estimates still have relatively high death rates. I mean, if you're going to say that between 200,000 and 300,000 Jews died, and then you want to say that more Catholics than Jews ended up dying, you're still going to have, even with conservative estimates, probably around 700,000 that perished in these camps. And that's still really very high. So, I mean, what you've got here is essentially something of a losing battle. I mean, sure, you might reduce the numbers tremendously, but you do have to realize that these notions of camps belong to legend as much as fact. Certainly, they are a thread that has built modern life, but by now, we have to say that they're only one thread. And of course, this thread is most important in Europe, particularly, of course, needless to say, in Germany most of all. The author does note that this has influenced the present-day German constitution, and the author is very much, of course, against this influence on the constitution of Germany. Readers should, of course, be warned that, as I've said, that this is a battle that tends to lead to unemployment and general social dysfunction, if not outright arrest. People really ought to ask themselves whether what happened 70-some years ago is really worth the dysfunction that the individual is going to suffer. So please ask yourself this before you become too enthused with books of this sort. Also, if you are a non-believer, as many in our movement are, we should not be joking about the Holocaust, even in irony. Because while we may think we're being ironic, when we think about the reaction of other people, this kind of dark humor just makes us look ghoulish. There again, if you are a Nietzschean with a dark sense of humor, and you think there's something to these stories about the camps, joking about them might be more understandable from that that philosophical perspective. However, if you really do not believe in these camps, then you're slandering Germans by perpetuating these ideas, and you're also harming the movement in the eyes of normies. So indeed, if you say that you are innocent, then indeed we should act like individuals who are metaphysically innocent of this burden. So therefore, comrades, I would hasten to caution you about delving too deeply into these waters of revisionism. So I thank you for listening to this relatively grim topic. Have a good evening and hail victory, comrades.
On days like this, anyone doing any speaking whatsoever is almost obligated to include a segment or two on what they themselves are thankful for and perhaps wax poetic on the meaning of such days. I'm going to do that, but such things are trite and expected and somewhat uninteresting, and I want to see if I can't be more helpful to you all once I'm done with the formalities. First and foremost, I am definitely thankful for each and every single one of you, especially for sticking with us during this trying time. Don't ever think that the headquarters group doesn't understand the party is here, second, of course, to Harold Covington's efforts, because of your efforts, not ours. And secondly, of course, in particular, I'm thankful for each of the people involved in the headquarters group, since without their efforts, this would have absolutely collapsed at this point. And last, but certainly not least, quite the opposite, in fact, I'm thankful for Harold Covington's gift of prophecy. Now, because someone always takes that literally, I have to explain that Harold's gift of prophecy is a comedic reference that he and several others adopted to his seemingly uncanny ability to foretell future events in ways that, well, horrify all of us. I'll explain more about that in a second. And with that out of the way, I'll get to the meat of my presentation. It's all well and good to be thankful on a day like Thanksgiving, but the purpose of such days, as called out correctly when someone does, is to examine whether or not we as individuals are thankful for things that really matter. The implication, of course, is that we're taking something for granted and in the coming year, we should make some effort to adjust our attitudes or our behaviors so that we are truly grateful for things which we should be grateful for. If you think about it, there's a certain difference between being thankful and being grateful. These differences are connotations rather than denotations linguistically, but that connotation is important and I'd like to explore that today. The way these two words are used differently from one another is actually very telling. Having sat and thought about this subject quite a bit this week, I can't think of a time that someone flippantly used the word grateful. Contrast that with how often we all use the words thank you, or I'm thankful for this, or any other example of the word thank, and realize how off the cuff and how easily we use that word. Well, why is this? Having compared and contrasted all of the important usages of both terms that I can think of, I note one stark difference between them both. Being thankful is rather passive and something that we're used to doing. Gratitude, on the other hand, is almost always used in an active and expressive manner. And in fact, the real purpose of Thanksgiving is not so much to give thanks, but to learn to express gratitude. And I have to wonder if we, collectively as a race, have lost that ability. Let me explain. Shortly after the death of Harold Covington earlier this year, I had the opportunity on Radio Free Northwest to talk about how important it was that I was shown I was wrong about very, very important things. Again, no, my purpose right now is not to harangue you. Just participate in my thought process and see where it takes you personally. Now think back to all of those times I shared that I was really, really wrong about something racial, political, moral, what have you. Embracing the fact that I'm wrong about those things and being grateful for that experience is what allowed me to progress in my own personal, racial, and political development. And just as important as those instances are several of the so-called prophecies Harold Covington left with us. One of them in particular occurred well before the rise of Donald Trump as a political candidate, wherein he essentially predicted what we've seen out of Donald Trump, especially in very recent political events, and it's important to dissect those, especially in light of Harold's prophecies. As of late, there have been a number of shocking and disturbing developments politically that we've absolutely got to cover here, since they're relevant to what we do. Now, first, Donald Trump lost control of Congress, though whether or not he ever had it was up for debate. There have also been a number of disturbingly conflicted news reports around the economy. There are, according to sources I consider legitimate, a record number of Americans employed. At the same time, there are a record number of Americans not working at all and not even seeking work. Now, the only logical conclusion one could draw from this is that there are a record number of Americans. Yet, our side, if you want to call it that, only reports one of these facts. These very same neutral, relatively speaking, news outlets also report that there's a record low amount of non-white unemployment and non-white poverty. Their wages, at least, are through the roof. Ours, well, that number I can't find anywhere, and that's disturbing. I bet you can guess why. And in spectacular fashion, around this migration caravan that's split into multiple caravans of many tens of thousands now, well, not only are they pouring across the border, but all illegal immigration is at a record high 2 years into the Donald Trump presidency. What's even more shocking about this is when Donald Trump, the lawfully elected president of the United States, lawfully gave an order to the Pentagon commanders to do everything they needed to do to keep the caravan out of this country, those very same Pentagon generals told him to piss off, and they're the ones that got their way. That should disturb everyone. But even so, I'm grateful for such things, and you all should be too. Think about this. We all know what's going on, and we all know that Donald Trump has not anywhere near lived up to what we thought was going to happen after his election, but all of this was not quite prophesied by Harold Covington many years ago, when we all, collectively as a movement, prior to the alt-right, theory-crafted and tried to game what would happen if white nationalists were somehow to elect a president. Now, that's not really what happened with Donald Trump, and I will cover that sometime next year, but for now, let's just pretend like that's what happened. If I were to collect all of these relevant news stories and studies and other sources, and time travel back to prior to 2016 and show this to all of Donald Trump's white nationalist supporters, they would be absolutely distraught and would feel, well, if nothing else, an unbelievable sense of betrayal and shock and a complicated mixture of several other things. But why? Well, the bee in everyone's bonnet in white nationalism has always been that it's going to take more than words to solve this problem, it's going to take more than ballots, and it's going to take more than peripheral involvement and simple ideological assent to the principles of white nationalism. It's going to take massive effort from everyone who's truly concerned about stopping white genocide. I won't go into the details of that today, since I'll rerun something about that next week. But for now, let's just realize and accept that there's going to be more involvement from each of us if our race is going to survive than merely pulling a lever in a voting booth. But again, the astute listener will ask, why? Why is that such a big deal? If you're having trouble catching on to my meaning about the difference between giving thanks and expressing gratitude, I'll throw out another example. And that example is the difference between seeking happiness and experiencing contentment. And herein is the promised waxing poetic on such days as Thanksgiving. You see, the objections we receive to everything about the Northwest Imperative, particularly homecoming and truly difficult political activity, is that such massive efforts, as this will surely take, detract from one's search for happiness, in terms of, well, whatever they think that is for them personally. And just like giving thanks is missing the actual point of expressing gratitude, the search for happiness is a cheap and very dissatisfying substitution for experiencing and generating contentment. In the early days of Trump's candidacy and all the way through this point in his presidency, the Northwest Front has taken plenty of flack from other white nationalists over our insistence that Donald Trump is merely fulfilling the role of the, well, let's call it the last false recovery this civilization will see before things get really bad. And for the record, we were right about that. But to be fair to an awful lot of you, you've been objective enough to admit that at the very least, he's not going to live up to expectations, and at best, he's only buying us time. Now, based on recent news events, I can't say that that's actually true either, but I'll give you that for the purposes of discussion today. For those of you who take that line that we should be grateful for Donald Trump because he's at least buying our race time, are you actually grateful for that? I mean, really, are you? Again, without haranguing you, I just want to ask the question. Are you truly grateful for that time? And more specifically, are you expressing your gratitude in such a way that you'll participate in something other than system politics, which is clearly not going to help our race survive the next century? I want to close out my talk today by giving you a couple of criteria you can use to see whether or not you are correctly expressing gratitude for the things that are happening around us. Firstly, when you realize that chasing your own happiness was not a viable strategy for determining what actions you will and won't take politically, did you realize that contentment and doing the right thing was actually what you were looking for? Now think about that very carefully, because your motivations for your actions are a very, very good indicator about whether or not you're expressing superficial thanks or genuinely demonstrating gratitude, like I did when I was shown I was wrong. That's a very important thing to find out about yourself, because it will determine what you do next. And from that point of new understanding, reevaluate, as if for the first time, the Northwest Imperative. Engage your reaction. Are you merely thankful that somebody's trying to do something because you have some vague concern about white survival? Or are you truly grateful, as I learned to be when I evaluated this material for the first time, such that you understand more is required of you? Now here's why this matters, and here's where I will end my commentary for today. Can you or can you not genuinely express gratitude for the opportunity to participate in something like the Northwest Imperative? If not, you might still be stuck in the superficial, unhelpful, happiness-chasing routine, as opposed to the deeper and more abiding and more sustaining understanding of contentment that comes from doing the right thing, even if it's inconvenient. And when I said I was going to end my commentary there, I meant it, because we've now come full circle and we're dealing with the white character problem again, and I promise no haranguing. So with that, I will wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving. Take care, friends. Radio Free Northwest is brought to you by the Northwest Front, P.O. Box 2188, Bremerton, Washington 98310. Or you can visit the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. Until next time, comrades, freedom. The rising of the moon, the rising of the moon.